Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Think, Believe, and Manifest Show with author, master trainer, and certified dream coach, Constance Arnold. Join us every week as we bring you life-changing information that will empower your life. And here's Constance.
Well, hello there, everyone, and welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. And I am Constance Arnold, your host for the Think, Believe, and Manifest talk show. And, of course, you know that I'm coming to you live with just a little southern flavor from beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. And it is a beautiful day here today. I am sitting in my office looking out at the beautiful, tall Georgia pine trees. And if you're not from Georgia, you have no idea what I'm talking about, but Georgia has the tallest, most beautiful pine trees that there are, and I just love looking at them. And I'm so grateful to God today for this beautiful day and for allowing me to experience sharing with you today. Well, how are you doing, and how has your week been? And I'm so excited about you joining me today, and I want to thank all of my listeners once again for all of your emails. I love them. Keep them coming from your comments, your phone calls, because it really keeps me abreast of how much the show is really impacting your life. And so it really encourages me to keep going on, and I'm so grateful. When I really started doing the talk show, my purpose for the show was to enlighten, inform, and to inspire people to take just small bits of information, you know, whatever missing piece of the puzzle information they might need for their lives during that day, and just take it and begin to implement it in their lives. And you know what I love to call it? I call it taking small baby steps toward change. And as you know, every week I have a portion of the show where I share my wow. And for the newcomers to the show, wow means within 1 week. So after you listen to our guest today, within 1 week, I want you to begin to implement one principle that you've learned from the show and just start taking small baby steps toward that change. This week, my wow was to script or to write out with emotion and feelings, what would my life look and feel like if I already had my desire? And this is just one technique or one method to keep you at a certain vibration level. So the desire that I chose, since I was working on the same desire last week, was my coaching and consulting business. So what I did was I began to write or script out what my coaching or consulting business would look like if I already had it, and I just wanted to read to you just a little bit of what I wrote. And I said, I am so excited about how my business has changed. After I started taking one small baby step daily towards expanding my business, today I got a phone call, and I am receiving a major contract with the state of Georgia where I will be coaching individuals who've been downsized. I am so grateful and excited. Just think, I will be able to set my own training schedule. I called my girlfriend and told her the good news, and we both just screamed in the phone together. I am so grateful, but now I will be able to participate in my morning Pilates class, and I even contacted my mentor in Africa and told him the great news, and that, in fact, I was going to tithe 10% of my contract to help him build a hospital in Africa. He was so excited and grateful, and he prayed with me. Now, that's just an example of what you can do to begin to put yourself in the feeling place of having it now. You might say, Constance, that's make-believe. No, that's just a method or a technique that can help get you into the feeling place. So that was my wow for this week. I hope that helped you. Well, let's get on to my guest, but I want to share about my upcoming guest for the month of June. And today, as always, I'm so excited because I have Steve Riles, and I'll introduce him later. But on June 14th, I have Dr. Sherry Buffington. She's the author of The Law of Abundance. On June 21st, I have Antonio Thornton. He's the author of the Law of Attraction Workbook, and he founded the largest Law of Attraction meetup group in the U.S. I'm excited to talk to him. And on June 28th, I have Nyka Nelson. She's a singer, songwriter, author. Mama never taught me to sing. So I want you to stay tuned. And, of course, if you happen to miss the airing of the live show, you can always download it later and listen to it again and again. Usually after I interview a guest, I go back and listen to the show maybe three or four times just to listen, because sometimes when I'm interviewing, I miss some great nuggets. Well, let me introduce my special guest for today, Mr. Steve Riles. He's the author of Drunk with Wonder. I've talked with Steve behind the scenes, and he lives in Northern California. He has a publishing company and has been a freelance music reviewer for 15 years. He has made and lost over $1 million. I want to talk to him about that, and has been studying mind-body health his entire adult life. He's very knowledgeable on so many things. I told him we want to get so much information from him today to share with our listeners. He's knowledgeable about science, spirituality, religion, and the metaphysical. And Steve, through learning to be present with his own deep feelings, he was able to let go of years of addictive behavior and has been sober for over 8 years. That is really great. He attributes his current health and happiness to his direct experience that healing takes feeling, and says that the healthy, safe, and appropriate sharing of feelings is key to a wonder-filled life. And so I am so excited to have Steve Riles. Steve, welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. How are you today?
Constance, it's so great to be here. Thank you so much. I'm doing great.
What's
Sounds
good?
Like you are too.
I am. I mean, you know, you have so much knowledge, so we're just going to just jump right into it so that our listeners can get as much information from you as possible. So, Steve, share with our listeners just a little bit about your life.
Well, it's been a full life, that's for sure. I started out growing up in the 50s in the Pacific Northwest, and then moved to Southern California in the 60s, mid-60s, and I got caught up in the culture wars, some people call them, of the 60s, and found myself heavily involved with the drugs and eventually with alcohol, and it took a long time to get clear of that, and I am now clear of it. I was, about March 1st, I celebrated 8 years of sobriety.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And it's hard to believe it's been 8 years, really. There certainly was a time in my life when I was convinced that I was never going to be able to do that, and that I would eventually die from it. But, you know, growing up in the 50s, I came from a conventional middle-class family. My parents were young. My dad was a World War II veteran, had been on front lines in Germany when he was only 19 years old. And back then we didn't talk about post-traumatic stress disorder or some of the other issues that are so clearly there for all of our servicemen and women. So my dad had no resources. And what he did was he let out his rage and his grief and all of his emotions by being rageful towards his children. I'm the oldest of five boys. And so I was raised in a kind of a milieu of fear and anger and intimidation and humiliation, being shamed, being beaten, that kind of thing. And I didn't thrive. I found myself retreating into books and into school, and had virtually no friends. I didn't feel safe to bring people over. It was a harsh time for me. Now, I want your listeners to know that many years ago I reconciled with my father, and
right.
We had a really good time for many years before he passed away in 2006. And so, what I found it was that this emotional wounding that I went through, that I think almost everybody goes through, one level or another, I kept and I think this is a very natural thing that virtually everyone does, is I kept looking for ways to, in essence, to medicate myself, to keep from feeling these emotions that seem so overwhelming and so hopeless. So first I discovered how to check out by getting lost in books and getting lost in TV. And then when I was a teenager and I discovered drugs, I learned how to get lost in drugs. And so that was the path my life wound up taking. By the time I was 17, I was homeless and living on the streets of San Francisco because I was basically at war with my dad and I didn't want to be around him. And I literally couldn't see a better outcome for myself at the time than dying on the street. I preferred dying on the street to living under his thumb. Now you can say, well, that's not a very reasonable decision to make, and I couldn't agree more. But my lifetime at that point of suppressed emotions and this trauma, this emotional trauma that I'd gone through, was so overwhelming that I didn't really know how to see a larger perspective.
Right.
So I wound up getting lost in the drug culture. And it was really through the intercession of one of my best friends that I'm even alive today.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so many people are, they may not be drinking, Steve, but they might be addicted to television or computer games or overeating. I call it frozen feelings, something where something difficult has happened to you and just not able to acknowledge that feeling of that traumatic experience or that traumatic childhood. And I always say that when you don't deal with your stuff deals with you. And I love it when you talked about healing takes feeling. Explain to our listeners a little bit about what that means.
Well, it means that when we, and this has, you know, goes back to pure energetics, the pure idea of energy is the operating, is the way that everything happens in our universe, is through one form of energy or another. As most of you probably know, Einstein came up with this theory of relativity where energy essentially equals mass. And so what that means is that everything we think of as matter, as our everything from our fingers to our toes to our toenails to the house in which we live, assuming we're fortunate enough to live in a house, are all part of these same little tiny packets of energy, of quantum energy. And so when we're born, we find that we have our hearts. And metaphysically, I believe that God, which is pure love, is the animating force of the universe, and this unconditional love comes pouring out of our hearts. And our hearts are like a prism. And so we have all these different qualities of light. For example, the different qualities of light that are associated with the seven chakras. And so we are taught, for example, that red energy that we see or perceive visually as red is equated with anger and is to be avoided, is to be something to be scared of, that's uncool, and it will get you in trouble, especially if you're a little kid and you get angry at your parents.
Right.
And so we're taught that certain forms of energy, because that's what I'm coming back to, is not okay to have or to feel or to own, essentially, to take ownership of. And so for myself, for example, if I wanted to survive in my household, I had to stuff my feelings.
Absolutely.
And so that's the same thing as saying stuffing energy. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever tried to hold on to an electric cord and keep the electricity from flowing into the appliance at the end of the cord, but it really doesn't work too well.
It doesn't.
And it can really, if you are successful in diverting that energy, you can create a short circuit. You can become electrocuted. There are some not really great things that can happen. Start a fire. And essentially, that's what we're doing. When we're flowing free and easy, when all of our energy is flowing free and easy, we're whole and complete, healthy human beings. But as soon as we start shutting down different energy bands, we start having dis-ease. You know, the ancient science, medicine of acupuncture, for example, is all about freeing up meridians where energy has become stuck.
I didn't know that.
That's exactly, and if you've, I don't know if you've heard of emotional freedom technique, EFT.
I have.
It's something my wife is a master at doing. It's what she does in her calling. And that's also about freeing energy, particularly emotional energy. So we wind up spending, many of us wind up spending much of our lives, all of our available energy goes to trying to keep these feelings at bay. It's kind of like putting our finger in the dike or trying to hold back a tsunami. It takes a tremendous amount of energy. That's where all our passion goes, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We wind up spending all of the energy that could go to what we're passionate about into just trying to maintain. So when I say that feeling is healing, what I mean is that whenever we're able and willing to go through the process, and there are lots of healthy, responsible ways to feel our feelings, we are able to free that blocked energy. And then we make, it's like draining a sewer or, you know, letting the water from some kind of a dam. It everything relaxes. The system relaxes and begins humming in an optimum way once again.
Oh, that's powerful. You mentioned that God is all there is. And you and I had talked before, and we talked about what we were going to talk about. And you said you wanted to talk about God and love is all there is. What does that mean? And
well,
how can that help somebody who may be really struggling right now?
Well, you know, many people have come to believe that God is somewhere else and that they are not God, that they're in fact born a sinner. That's the way many people are raised, is to believe that they're born, in essence, screwed up. And that even more so, that there's nothing they can do about it. They're just stuck. I mean, the best they can do is go to an intercessory and beg for forgiveness, beg for healing, beg for help. But they're not in charge. And I'm here to say I believe that we are in charge. I believe that God decided that the highest act of love that God could possibly imagine was to incarnate into form and to offer unconditional life to uncounted beings all over this universe. Mm-hmm. And my guess is other universes as well, but let's stick to this universe. That's big enough, you know. And that this one gift of God as us was this gift of unconditional life. And if you think about it, can you imagine a greater gift, a higher gift than the gift of life? The gift of the freedom of choice, the gift to make of life what you will. Now, one of the key points of this, Constance, is that when we realize that we have been blessed with the gift of life, every single one of us, that means that we've all been, every single person on the planet, all of life, has been blessed with the greatest gift that God can possibly give, which is the gift of unconditional life. And so instead of having to look somewhere outside of ourselves to be okay, we realize that the highest form or act of worship we can possibly imagine is the act of being appreciative, of being grateful for the gift of every breath we take. And that it is, in fact, our birthright as sons and daughters, as precious children of God, to go out and have the most incredible life, the life of our dreams, that we deserve it, that we're worth it. So,
well, you know, most people don't believe that. You know, you talked about God and love. You know, Tina Turner has a song, What's Love Got to Do With
It? Oh, yes.
You know,
great
because
song.
Love has been touted as the be-all, end-all feeling, and really it has the highest vibrational level of all the emotions. So how can just experiencing love change a person's life who may be trying to pay their mortgage or struggling to put their children through school. What's love got to do with that?
Love has everything to do with it. When we realize that we have come to earth for a reason, what that means really, Constance, is that our life matters. And when we're able to take a step back from our stories that we've grown up with, that we were raised with, mm-hmm. stories that we're not good enough, that because we're not good enough, we have to work really, really, really hard to even imagine being worth anything at all, and that our worth comes from our doing, not from our essential being, then if we find ourselves in a position where we've lost a job, where we might be losing our home, so on and so forth, we can see ourselves really as victims, as, you know, the world is got it out for me, right? It's,
right.
I'm an innocent victim, and it's all these other people's fault. And as long as we stay stuck in that picture, in that story, then we're at the effect of whatever's going on in our lives. We can't stop and make different choices. So all of a sudden, when we're willing to wake up and start taking charge of our life, we can say something like, okay, I've lost my job, but you know what? Deep down, I really didn't like it very much.
Right. What did you do when you lost, you made and lost millions? How did you handle that, Steve?
Well, when I went from, you know, this has kind of been an interesting life. I was homeless in mm-hmm. the San Francisco in 1967. By 1973, I had graduated from UC Berkeley, and soon found myself in a middle-class job and met and married a woman and helped raise her two children. And so I was, all of a sudden, I kind of dove into the middle class after having such a wild period in my youth. And I didn't really like it that much, but what I saw around me was that people seemed to count success by how much money they had. It's certainly one of the things my father respected. He respected the fact that I got a college education. He respected the fact that I was working. And so what I found myself doing, I had rebelled against my father so that whatever he wanted, I didn't want. Then when I turned the things around, then I wanted to give him what he wanted. I wanted to be who he wanted me to be, and I thought maybe that would make me happy. But it didn't. It left me feeling empty. Now, I pleased him. I made more money than he ever did. I, you know, had more toys, and I had two homes and, you know, all this stuff. But I also had the big mortgages and the big stress and anxiety that went along with it.
Right, right.
And so here I go, you know, on into my life, and eventually was, at least on paper, was worth more than $1 million. And then I began to go through some personal growth work. And I realized that this world I had created for myself, this world of material well-being, pleasing my dad, pleasing society, you know, this marriage and the kids, that all, you know, it's the picture, right?
Right.
It's the scenario. I wasn't happy. I was bored. I was feeling despairing. I didn't know what to do and where to go, and I started drinking more and more heavily because I didn't know what else to do. I thought I was trapped forever. And so I went through a really tumultuous period in my 40s where I met a woman who, my marriage had kind of dried up emotionally and was just kind of going through the motions. And I really did think, Constance, that I was just going to, this is what I was going to do. You know, I had it all. I had the material world figured out. So I had all the money I needed, the toys I needed, the homes I needed. I had more than I needed. I had so much stuff I couldn't even keep track of it. And yet my soul was really clamoring to make a difference in the world, really.
Absolutely.
To not just be comfortable, but to express my love in ways that I didn't even know how. And so I you know, I wound up meeting a woman who I'm been with for over 13 years and married to and living here on this beautiful property in the mountains. And I started trying to do some dreams that I had not dared to try. I've always been an entrepreneur, so I tried my hand at doing a music business, an online music business that coincided with my work as a music reviewer. And I did that for 5 years in the middle of the dot-com boom. And then that crashed back in 2001. And I woke up one morning and realized, I'm drinking way too much. I'm still not happy. What is it that I'm missing? And I realized that I needed to stop. I just had to stop drinking. And I didn't think I could, but with my wife's help and her healing abilities and essential oils and some other healing modalities, I was able to eventually kick the alcohol habit. And when I woke up from that alcohol, Constance, I went, oh, my gosh, I had gone from all this money, and I had spent all that money and then borrowed a bunch of money on my good credit to try and keep that Internet business going.
Mm-hmm.
And when I woke up from my alcohol stupor, I went, I can't do this. This is crazy. You know, I'd never pay this off in 1,000 years. So I wound up doing what a lot of people did back then. I declared bankruptcy soon after I stopped drinking. And I just let all of this stuff go. I sold everything, sold my cars, sold the houses, paid off as many debts as I could, and just said, okay, now I wonder what it would be like to have the time to enjoy my life, rather than feel like I have to be working every waking minute to pay not one but two mortgages,
right,
and pay for all these other toys and all the credit card debt and so on and so forth. So that's when I decided to remake my life, and that was a little over 8 years ago.
Well, and you know, so many people are experiencing that right now. Talk a little bit about, I know you told me that you've been studying Ernest Holmes, The Science of the Mind, and I've been rereading that book again and again, and I want you to share with our listeners a little bit about the power of thought. What is thought, and how could that change or create the life that you desire?
Well, you know, one of Ernest Holmes' most famous sayings is, change your thinking, change your life. That's a bumper sticker short,
yes,
and
it
yet
is.
It is an incredibly powerful thing to say. And people can say, well, I changed my thinking. Yeah, well, you may change a conscious thought, but I think it helps, and that's what I wrote about this extensively in Drunk with Wonder. I think it can be really helpful to understand what goes on in our brains, physiologically, emotionally, chemically, so on. And what happens is we learn stories about how life works or doesn't work when we're very, very young. In fact, it starts when we're pre-verbal. And it usually has to do, the most traumatic things that happened in our lives are the ones that scare us the most. And that's, you know, we get scared in terms of sheer survival. And so, you know, for much of the history of the human race, most of the people, most of the time, surviving long enough to procreate was the name of the game. That was it. And if you were, you know, 100 years ago, if you lived to be 50, you were doing really well.
Right.
You know, you barely had kids, and maybe you had a grandkid, and then you were done. You were dead. And so there's this whole part of our lives that we have come to realize is this huge gift, because we live so much longer than we used to. And so when we realize that we can change our thinking, but that it takes some effort, because these stories that we inculcated when we were very little are running around in our subconscious. So we can change our conscious thought, go, oh, yeah, I want a new Porsche. I want a new Beamer, or, you know, whatever it might be, some external thing out there. But and we might put that affirmation up on the mirror and up on the dashboard of our car, you know, all over the place, plastered everywhere, repeated 100 times a day. But if we don't understand that what's going on in our subconscious is that we were raised being told we were worthless, that we were never going to be good enough, that we were never going to amount to anything, Well, what's going on, that subconscious programming, is much more powerful than our conscious thought. So we need to be willing to start going through the process, whether it's, you know, I highly recommend some form of mindfulness meditation, for example, where we can begin to understand that who we really are, the core of who we are, is not any of our thoughts. We're not any of our stories. We've just taken them on, mostly unconsciously, mostly when we were very young, and we haven't literally haven't given them another thought since.
And so how does a person change thoughts of lack? Somebody said the only poverty that a person has is the poverty that's within their mind. And so if they're struggling financially, what can they begin to do right now to begin to change their thoughts about lack? Do they meditate on it? Do they visualize? Do they say it out loud? How can we begin that process from lack to abundance?
Okay, so what I think most of us have been taught is that abundance and lack have to do with external factors. You know, how much money we have, how big a house we have, how new our car is, that kind of thing. And so when we're going through this really massive, once in a generation, if that, shift in what's going on in the world, it's time to take stock of what's really important to us. You know, as I was going through my process of realizing that I was going to have to declare bankruptcy, that this whole, you know, deck of cards that I had put up, house of cards, was tumbling down, and my choice was not to keep the cards propped up, but to embrace change or to resist change, that's where I realized that suffering comes from. Because after all, change is inevitable.
It is.
It's suffering that's optional. And so you've heard the phrase, I'm sure everybody's heard the phrase, to be able to go with the flow. So when the flow changes, what we have the power to change is how we are with the isness, how we are with the flow. So we may find ourselves in a situation where we took on more debt than we could really afford to get a house because, you know, everybody was doing it, right?
Right.
And so we go, okay, so there was a place in me that knew deep down that this was crazy and that this, I didn't see how this could possibly work, but everybody was doing it, so I thought, what the heck, I'd give it a shot. So now you see how that all unfolds. So part of it is being able to feel the feelings of fear, of lack, know they're not you. So yes, mindfulness meditation, some way of realizing that we are not our thoughts, that we have thoughts, but they are not us, that there is this still, small voice that is who we really are, that we are these amazing beings, these children of God, and that our worth doesn't come from our pocketbook. It comes from who we are and how we show up in the world.
But, you know, most people don't know that, and right now so many people are experiencing downsizing. They're experiencing foreclosure, and just like you said, they realize that they've just taken on too much financially. And so people are really crying out for spirituality. And I think one thing that you shared was that most people feel a great sense of shame on you that you couldn't pay your mortgage, shame on you that you had to file bankruptcy. And I just want to reiterate again, as a therapist for 25 years, that really getting in touch with your feelings and allowing yourself to feel what you feel and start being instead of doing and knowing that your worth comes out of who you are, not what you do, is really a great place for many of our listeners to just begin to, like you said, Steve, just begin to flow.
That's right. And it's really important to be able to take stock of what's going on in life. I mean, so often, it seems to me, we get so caught up in the day-to-day, right? I mean,
right.
If we get into a big, you know, a good-sized mortgage and we've got to work really, really hard, maybe two jobs, maybe the husband and the wife both have to work, and they're chasing this it's really a mirage in many ways. Because, you
is,
know,
it is.
Even if you have the house, even if you have the car, even if you have all the toys, if you're not in touch with your own soul, if you're not in touch with spirit, if you're not in touch with what's really important, I guarantee you it's going to be a hollow feeling. I mean, I chased that for decades, Constance. I mean, I came out of the streets.
Right.
There was a time in my life after I graduated from Berkeley where I was absolutely convinced that if I could clear $1,000 a month, that was it. I was going to be set. And I found myself 20 years later, we were clearing, $15,000 a month. And it still wasn't enough.
It's not enough to fill the void. And, you know, just like the Bible says, seek first the kingdom or seek first the spirit, and things will be added to you. And I tell the people that I'm coaching, let things be added to you. Don't go after that. Really go after spirit. Go after who you are in God. And so I just think that that's just great foundational information that our listeners can really implement into their lives. I want you to talk a little bit about prayer and the laws governing prayer. Do you pray every day? What is prayer to you? And how can people begin to pray just maybe on a daily basis in their own lives?
Well, you know, it seems to me that there are at least a couple of different kinds of prayer. And I want to really distinguish between the two. There's a beseeching prayer, which is, oh, God, please help me. And then there is an affirmative prayer, which is the form of prayer that works for me and which the one that I recommend. And an affirmative prayer is filled with gratitude and appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
A prayer of thank you, God, for this moment, this breath, this meal. You see, you can feel the difference in the energy already.
Right.
It's oh, Lord, why me? What's wrong with me? Why haven't you helped me? Why won't you help me? How come other people are doing great and I'm not? Well, that's because we've got it set up that we are not really in charge of our own lives, right? You know,
right.
when we're looking at God or some outside agency or force to take care of us, we're in effect acting as children. We're not stepping in to the full power and glory of who we really are. And it is when we step into that power and glory that we shift all of the energies around us. Because vibrationally, you know, we talked earlier about these different states of energy and how all matter is actually energy if you look at it very, very closely. And so that's true of all of our thoughts as well. When we think black thoughts, when we think woe is me, when we think the world is out to get us, then, of course, the subjective law of the universe is that whatever we thinketh, we receive.
Right.
We experience. So if we think that the world is out to get us, then God is going to be going, well, okay, I guess you want to see this. I guess you want to have this experience. So here you go. Here, have some more. Then you get to keep proving you're right. You get to keep proving you're a victim. And, of course, the big thing about proving you're a victim is that you don't have to change.
Right. And so you talk a lot about gratitude and appreciation. How does that impact our lives and our vibration level? So can a person just live in the moment of, thank you, God, for my breath. Thank you, God, for the food that I'm eating. And what happens to the universe and to their lives when they're grateful or appreciative?
Everything changes. Everything changes because it's really the focus that we're, you know, the eyes that we're looking through. When we look around, in fact, if this is something that Oprah's talked about, various teachers have talked about over the years, I highly recommend that people start keeping a gratitude journal.
Right.
And that is all about spending some time every day consciously looking around to see what we can be grateful for, to seeing who we can appreciate and give them an appreciation. Because when we start seeing the world through eyes of appreciation and gratitude, we are able to effect great change. I mean, think about this. So we've been working really hard and we've been, you know, spending all of our money on trying to keep it together. and things have just changed really dramatically. I mean, the world is shifting beneath our feet.
It is.
The automobile industry is changing. I mean, this creative destruction is one of the hallmarks of capitalism, and it's, you know, in order to have room and energy and capital and equipment and people available for new technologies and new industries, which are springing up all over the place, by the way, we need to free up that capital and those resources. And I wish there was a way that was not did not seem so chaotic and distressful for people. But you know, that's the isness for you. That's what is.
Right.
And so we can take stock of our lives and go, wait a minute, I was doing all this stuff because that's what I was told to do. That's what I was taught to do. That's not really what's in my heart. You know, what I'd really like to do is help people. Well, a lot of people need help, so how can you start helping people? And one of the best ways to do that is to change your own vibrational frequency. And the only way to change your vibrational frequency is by conscious intention, is by becoming...
Right, because somebody said wherever your attention goes is where energy flows. And so if you consciously and deliberately make a decision for this moment, I'm going to say thank you for my home. Thank you for my car. Thank you for my life. Is that what you mean?
Exactly what I mean. And what that does is it changes it right down to the cellular level in our bodies. It changes our vibrational frequency. And so when people are frantic and they're scared, and they're trying to find a new job, that franticness and that fear is communicated, even if it's unconsciously. And that can make it more challenging to find a job, because the people who are willing to take charge of their lives and to become really present in the moment are able to go out and speak with potential employers in a way that's more calm and more rational and less kind of needy. And
right.
And the employer is going to go, wow, this is the person I want to employ. You know, there's going to be a lot less drama, a lot less stuff going on. Because when we're thinking clearly, you know, when we felt our feelings and we're current, then we're able to think more clearly. That's one of the biggest gifts of feeling your feelings, is so that you can think more clearly.
Well, you know, you talked about the person who may be looking for a job, and the facts are so looming in their lives, but facts are not necessarily the truth. So how can a person live beyond what they see with their natural eyes just realistically on a daily basis? Let's just say, for example, that person who's looking for a job, and every day they have to get up and go online and send out their resumes and go and interview with companies. How can they, moment by moment, really make that happen and really dispel fear?
Well, I like to say that love is one choice away. Joy is one choice away. And I realize that these are tumultuous times, and I deeply appreciate how scary it can feel. However, and I'm sure you've talked to your clients about this, and you've heard other people talk about this, that the Chinese, who've had a continuous civilization for 5,000 years, have a character that represents crisis, and it also represents opportunity.
Hmm.
It's the same character.
Is it?
Yes. And so... I think it's really important to take a moment and think about that. One person's crisis is another person's opportunity. When things are going along status quo, you know, same, same, there's not much room for the new to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people are being forced out of work, forced out of what they're used to, their routine, their comfort zone, it can feel scary. And the truth is also that that's where all the opportunity is. That's where all the opportunity of doing something different is. For example, in California, you know, we have a serious economic crisis going on. The state is broke. There's a lot of things that are broken in this state. And yet, where all of the job, virtually all of the job growth is going on is from entrepreneurs, is from men and women who are choosing to figure out something to do, whether it's that something is on the internet, whether it's becoming a coach, whether it's becoming a writer, whether it's becoming a virtual assistant. I was just reading about people who can easily get started in becoming virtual assistants and start making as much as $25 an hour over the internet from home.
Right, that is big business. And so in the midst of a crisis, there's always an opportunity. So what you're saying is that we always have a choice how we're going to respond to what's happening to us.
That's right. And, you know, when we were kids, our parents, our fathers in particular, you know, thought that they would probably work for one company all their adult lives, and many,
right.
many people did. Now the experts are saying that the average person coming up through as a worker today is going to have 6 or 8 or even 10 different jobs in their lifetime. And so this change becomes more and more just part of what we do, part of who we are. And that's kind of the silver lining behind what can appear to be great upheaval, is we can say, well, you know what, my father worked for General Motors, my grandfather worked for General Motors, I worked for General Motors, now that's over. So what would I really like to do? To step back for a minute and say, what would I like to do with my time? My comfort is gone. My sure thing has evaporated. So now what? And there are a lot of opportunities out there for retraining.
Right. And I have a workshop that I do called What Do You Want to Do with the Life That You Have Left? How passionately and purposefully do you want to live your life? And I think this is a great time for people, just like you said, to really take a look and say, you know, I hated that job for 20 years, and now I'm just going to deal with my fear and really move and live in my passion.
That's right.
So talk a little bit about what the law of attraction is to you, and how can a person begin to use this law, because it is indeed a law, to create change in their lives.
Yeah, the law of attraction is really important to understand because, you know, like all law, it's an impersonal law. This is you put a thought out into the universe, out into the, as we would say in Science of Mind, into the subjective law of the universe, and that's what's going to get created. You know, the subjective law does not evaluate or judge what someone says that they want by their thoughts and their actions. They just give it to them. So if we think that we're not good enough, the universe is going to keep giving us opportunities to prove that we're not good enough.
Right.
As soon as we decide that we are good enough and that we are worth every good thing, then the universe is going to start giving us that, because it gives us whatever we say is so. You know, if we're saying, oh, woe is me, I'm a victim, it's all the corporation's fault, or it's all the government's fault, or it's all, you know, my mother's fault, or my husband's fault, or, you know, whatever we might say, we are telling the universe that we see the world in terms of being a victim. And so we're going to keep getting opportunities to prove that we're right.
Right.
And so the only way out of that is to just come to a full stop and go, you know, I'm done being a victim. I trust, and that's where part of it, I trust, I have faith, I have belief that God is all there is, and that God is good, and that I am good, and that I am intrinsically, my birthright is that I am worth every good thing. Now, what good things do I really want? Do I really want to work 50 or 60 hours a week to pay for a mortgage on a home that's really too big and demands so much attention and effort? You know, 30 years ago, the average size home in this country was maybe 1,500 square feet. Now it's 2,500 square feet.
Is it?
And yet the number of people per capita living in a house has dropped dramatically. So we might want to...
That sounds so interesting, because I have a client who has had this big house, and she was so exhausted from working to keep this house that she would just pull into her garage, close her garage door, go upstairs into her bedroom. And that's where she lived. That's where she ate her dinner, in her bedroom and in her bathroom. And then she never even really experienced the rest of the house. And I had to ask her, is that truly authentically what you want to do? Are you living quality life by living in that big house? And so she made a decision that she wanted to downsize, and now she's a lot happier.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how people use the word downsize, and that's almost a pejorative. It's almost, you know, kind of a negative. And people can say, oh, this is just a trick, but our word choice is so important, as I'm sure you know. So what about if we write size?
I love
downsize?
That. Uh-huh. I'm
what if we, you know, what if we really take stock? And for example, if we've lost a job and we're looking for another position, well, we can spend our time lamenting that and choosing fear. Choosing other ideas and thoughts is just as easy. It really is, if you're willing to go for it. And one of those is to go, wow, for the first time, you know, so many of us, we go through high school, we go through college, we immediately start working, we get married, start a family, you know, have a house and another house, and the next thing you know, we're 20 years into this. We're in our late 30s, we're into our 40s, we're exhausted. We've completely lost track of why we're doing what we're doing. And yet we're too busy to ever stop and take stock.
I know it.
So what if you chose to see whatever change is going on in your life right now as the biggest gift you've ever had? It's just one choice away.
Right. You sound so peaceful, and I know when I talk to you, your whole thing is to really serve people. And are you studying to be a minister?
I'm actually in my final year of studying to become a licensed spiritual coach.
Okay.
Which is kind of 1 year short of being a science of mind. We call them spiritual directors now.
Okay.
We've been rebranding our science of mind languaging, so we're moving away from the name church, and we have spiritual centers now, spiritual directors and spiritual coaches and so on. And that's where my passion is to be a spiritual coach, to really work with people at the core of what's going on for them and to help them be able to take charge of their lives, to help them become present in the moment so that they are able to make more conscious choices that work better for them rather than, you know, continue to be at the effect of our culture, which says you're never good enough, you never have enough, he who dies with the most toys wins. You know, that kind
Hi.
Of attitude. My attitude is he who dies with the most toys is dead.
Right.
And so what? You know, so who cares about your toys when you're dead? What will matter is who you've loved and who you've allowed to love you. That's what matters at the end of our lives. The only thing we can take with us is the love that we have created and experienced and shared during our lifetime. That's the only thing that transitions through.
You're so right. Well, speaking of spirituality, we have about 5 minutes. How can a person give themselves a spiritual treatment, and what is a spiritual treatment?
Well, that's there are many ways to do that.
So give us one.
One of my favorite spiritual treatments is to go for a walk in the wilderness where there are no cars and where there are no dogs barking and where it's all you can hear is the sound of birds, maybe walk by a stream or a river where you can hear the water run, where you can get reacquainted with this beautiful natural world that we live in. That's one thing. Another thing that I find, especially for people who live in cities and find it hard to get out, is to get yourself some beautiful music that really works for you.
Oh, I love music. I love music.
Yeah. It's often called, the genre is often called spa music. And it's quiet, gentle music, the kind that you might imagine taking a bubble bath in or sitting down in a hot tub and just relaxing, just getting present into the moment. And, of course, a huge spiritual practice that I think is crucial is the willingness to learn some form of meditation practice.
Do you meditate every day?
I do.
Okay.
And I meditate in a couple of different ways. One is a a more traditional form of sitting meditation, where I work with a mantra, I work with some simple statement. I've been working recently with "May all beings be happy," for example. May all beings be at peace. Excuse me. But I also really love walking meditation. And this is something that a Buddhist monk named Thich Nhat Hanh is very famous for writing about. He's done some great books. He's a really powerful presence. He's been quite a mentor in my life. And so to be able to go for a walk every day and to be able to look at the beauty around you, no matter what time of year it is a way to connect with, again, with the present moment.
So you talk a lot about being in the present moment. What does that mean? Does that mean that you just take your thoughts and you live in just this moment, and then the next moment you live in that moment? What does that mean for our listeners?
That's right, this moment now. In fact, someone who's become very famous, Eckhart Tolle, wrote a book called, and he was not as famous then, but he wrote a really wonderful book called The Power of Now. And The Power of Now is all about the present moment. You know, the past is a fading memory. The future is only imagined. All we really have is now. We can't ever really do anything or think anything or feel anything in the past or in the future. We can only feel it now. So a lot of times our fears, things we get worked up about, are not really present in the moment. They're imagined possibilities.
Oh, that's very good.
Negative, imagined possibilities. You know, the truth is that 90% plus, 9 out of 10 homeowners in this country are current with their mortgage. It's scary and sad and, you know, tumultuous for the 1 out of 10 people who have got something going on with their mortgage. But the truth is there are lots of programs out there right now. I've heard about people who have been able to successfully renegotiate with their bankers with some of these new programs Obama's put in place, and are actually working things through. But if we get lost in our fear of what might happen, that takes all of our energy.
It does. And so if a person could just take that one principle from this program, that would be phenomenal, just living in the now, being grateful for the now, appreciative for the now, and then when the next moment comes, you do the same thing.
Find something to appreciate.
So do you ever worry, Steve?
Do I ever worry?
Uh-huh.
Of course. I am not perfect. I mean, I'm perfectly me. But when I worry, it tends to be when I get tired,
mm-hmm.
when I get hungry, when I'm not taking good care of myself. And for me, I'm even grateful for the worrying thought, because that to me is a sign that I need to take care of myself.
It is. It is.
So even a worrying thought is a gift.
It is. Well, you know, I had so much that I wanted to discuss with you, and we have about 1 minute left. So what 1 minute summary would you like to leave with our listeners? What one thing, one principle, one concept would you like to share with our listeners?
How about this?
Okay.
And this is something that I've gotten from Neil Donald Walsh's new book. He's written some great books, Conversation with God series. He's got a new book out, brand new, called When Everything Changes, Change Everything. When Everything Changes, Change Everything. It's
okay.
A phenomenal book that really addresses some of the questions that we've been working with today. And the thing that he says that blew my mind, even after all of my work, all these years, is all change is for the better.
Oh, wow. So we're going to have people meditate on that. So, Steve, how can people reach you if they want you to be a speaker, if they want you to coach them? Do you have a website, or how can people reach you?
I do. My book, Drunk with Wonder, Awakening to the God Within, we have a website that's Drunk with Wonder. Just spell out Drunk with Wonder, all one word. .com. And you can reach me at steve@drunkwithwonder.com. You can go to my website and sign up for my free monthly newsletter. I've got fresh articles and music reviews and poetry and People and Organizations Being the Change in Every Issue. If you'd like to buy my book, and that would be really cool, you can call 800-247-6553, 800-247-6553 with your credit card 24/7. I'm also on Amazon, and I want to let your listeners know that I have a great audio version of Drunk with Wonder available on iTunes or audible.com. Just do a search for Drunk with Wonder.
Okay, we're finished, Steve. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
God bless you, and thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been great being with you today.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.